Everybody stop talking now. Attention. I told you, all of my critics, I told you all that I was the greatest of all time. When I beat Sonny Liston, I told you today I'm still the greatest of all time. Never again defeat me.
Never again
say that I'm going to be defeated. Never again
make me the underdog until I'm about 50 years old.
That's right.
Then you might get me.
It is better than most. Better than most.
Goated Podcast. Thank you guys for joining in. We have a special guest today, Travis Fulton, one of my great friends in the industry, one of the people I look up to in the industry and try to stay up to date with so that I stay up to date in the golf world as best I can. A lot of you know him. His social media accounts are amazing. Some of the best instructional side-by-side comparisons, the tour, breaking down the tour swing and the greatest players in the world that he actually interacts with a ton and coaches and has had relationships with guys that have accomplished some of the greatest things in the golf space, which is amazing. We've been blessed to sponsor 2 years in a row the roundtable discussion at Travis Fulton's studio here in Ponte Vedra, and insane setup here he's got in the studio. He's going to have more locations. Some of the top coaches that are here at Sawgrass stopped by, some of the top players we've been able to meet. Fitting studio here is amazing, and just the environment that he brings for coaches, for players, for students. It's something you have to check out. If you're in Northeast Florida anywhere or driving through I-95, he's a staple in the golf industry, and his first location here is something to witness as well. So we're excited to have him.
Thank you. Yeah, yes. Welcome back. Ponte Vedra, right? We're actually in Jacksonville. This is my studio is technically in Jacksonville, but a pitching wedge that way, maybe a 9-iron for some, I think, is, you know, that's when you get into Ponte Vedra. Of course, Players Championship this week. We've been out there, and best players in the world are here. And it was fun yesterday, and thank you again for being a part of the event, the coaches event. We had a lot of the top coaches here, you know, being able to interact with them and talk about what's new in their world. Of course, a lot of the players that they're working with, and just some of my students that are people that I do business with, great people. You guys got to meet David Minette with Wounded Warrior.
Yeah.
The work that he does is amazing, and we do a lot of work in here with bringing the Warriors into this studio and having a full-on golf league using the About Golf Simulator. I mean, it's just fantastic.
Amazing.
And the Zellner Foundation, they were here. So, yeah, it was cool to bring everybody together. Appreciate you guys being here.
Such a good event. I told Thor, the Golf Rope also sponsored. You guys have heard Thor on the podcast, I think, 2 weeks ago. But last year when we sponsored, it was amazing the night of. Like, we left, and Chris had great conversations, and we had great relationships we built that night with Cody Blick. We ended up sponsoring Cody Blick. It was awesome for the year, and he tore it up. Korn Ferry Tour player. Mm-hmm. It's going to have a great career. He's healthy now. And met Chad Mum, who is the director, producer of Full Swing,
producer,
who's
yep.
one of our favorite shows, one yeah. of everyone's favorite shows on Netflix. Season 2 just came out. Shout out Full Swing and Chad. But as we grew, or as we went away from the event, the relationships weren't just like roundtable night. It
yeah.
was like the best people you yeah. invited, and it's because of you in the back and your pedigree. But anyone that you bring in and that we were a part of that was a blessing, and last night as well, because you could tell they cared, and if you co-signed for us and in the golf space, it was relationships that we built for a lifetime. I felt like it was great.
Yeah, that's what it is, right? I mean, I think any business, particularly golf, I mean, it's a relationship business. It's a small niche group, I think, in many ways. And we were just talking about Willie, you know, Jason Williams, who I did a lot of work with at PXG, and, you know, and now he's a big part of Flag and Anthem, which is a cool clothing company. And I saw him and he was like, yeah, I talked to Kevin and he's coming up. He said he's going to be spending some time with you. And it was just like, wait, wait a minute, you guys know each other too? Like, well, of course
small
you
world.
Do. Yes. I mean, of course you do. And so that's the golf business. And, you know, I've been fortunate enough to be in it for 24 years now. And to be able to have a place where you can invite him in and do events. And that was just one event that we've done here, but to be able to have them come in here and then meet your other friends and then see them kind of take off is pretty cool.
So good. Yeah. I love talking to Ralph. Ralph was awesome too the other night. He's got a putting tour read.
Yeah.
The app in the app store that's taken the tour by storm we'll be talking about.
And that's the first time I met Ralph in person.
Oh, wow.
You know, we talked on the phone. He was on my podcast. And tour read, check it out. It's another way to read the green. It's got a little different algorithm. It's got an app. Teaches a lot of players. I think he's got three in the field this week.
Yeah.
Players Championship. And so it was cool for him to stop by and meet him in person.
Amazing.
Jason Bale, who I think will be the PGA Teacher of the Year next year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, his career is just taken off.
Yep.
And it was cool to have him come by. John Ortega, who works with Jake Knapp since he was 8 years old. I think, you know, John's like a legend in California, in teaching. And, you know, to have him come in and spend some time and get to know him face-to-face is really cool because that guy knows everybody.
Yeah.
And so it's just, you know, that's how it works, you know. Yes. And you learn from everybody and you build relationships, and then pretty soon you know their people and they know yours, and that's the way the world works.
Exactly. Now, we talk a lot about putting good people around you and what it takes to be goated, what it takes to be the greatest of all time, and you don't see many successful people that don't build people up around them, that don't help connect people around them, and then treat people right. You don't want to burn bridges. I try to always put in some preaching here, but we do want to talk about the greatest, what it takes to be the greatest of all time, and that's that. And Travis is one of the greatest. Will be he's a pillar and will be a Hall of Famer instructor. And,
I don't know about that.
And he is uplifting and edifying people around him always. That's why people vouch for him and show up. So I'm grateful for that. That was a perfect segue into, like, we're excited, and Chris and Jonah both know more on the instruction side and what you've been doing. But what I'm excited to hear about this week, the players specifically first. We're up here because of the Players' Championship. Mm-hmm. Who are some people to watch for? It just started. The round just started as we're filming this.
Well, first off, I mean, the course is there's going to be some low scores. You know, I think today and tomorrow you're gonna see some low scores. They're just getting out there, and we see Rory jumping out to the lead, and it's soft. And there's no wind. I mean, finally we get good weather. It's been brutal the last 3 years.
Yeah.
At the Players. And what was it, the year before that? It was COVID and everything shut down. I remember standing there, I think it was on the 15th green, and the whole thing just stopped, you know, because of COVid. That was just
five years
ago.
It was the middle of the tournament.
Right in the middle of the tournament. So, like, the Players has had some, you know, it hasn't been, like, ideal in the way of fortune, you know, with COVID and the weather and... Oh, and by the way, Liv, which I'm sure we'll get to. So,
yes.
but yeah, I mean, I think when you look at this tournament, the cool thing about this place, and I was the director of instruction at TPC Sawgrass for 8 years. And what's cool about Sawgrass is that the course really doesn't benefit anyone. And you look at the past winners, a former student of mine, Fred Funk, he won here at the age of 48. Tim Clark won here. You know, Craig Perks won here, you know, and all due respect, right? I mean, like, these guys come in and won. You know, these guys are not long hitters. They're kind of plotters, A to B to C. But then you have the bombers, like Rory's won here. You know, and Tiger's won here a couple of times. But I would tell you right now, Tiger, this is not his favorite course. I can tell you that because it kind of took his driver out of his hand and forced him to hit different shots. But he figured it out and was able to win a couple of times. So it really doesn't favor anybody. Anybody can come in here, you have a good week, and you can win. Webb Simpson, You know, he comes in here and blitz the field and win. But then you have your star power like JT. JT won here just a few years ago. Siwoo Kim. I mean, you just start naming these. It's like, wow, this is a wide range of players, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, Phil Mickelson, a lefty. Sergio, of course, has won here. So it's a wide range. But Sawgrass is cool, man. It doesn't beat you up with length. It intimidates you off the tee. And it makes you think around the greens a little bit. And a lot of the short game shots, you've got to be able to get, you can't fake it. You got to be able to get the ball up and down here. But I think more than that, you've got to take advantage of the holes that you can. The par fives, you got to get your birdies there. A couple short par fours, because there's some brute par fours. Mm. That one bag swing, like you say, the eject button is pretty close to the accelerator, and you can make it double in a hurry.
Yeah, so true.
So on that note, at least for me, and I'm sure these guys feel the same way, when we discuss greatest of all time, my mind goes to wins. I feel like championships, wins really define a career. In your opinion, what do you feel like it takes for somebody to win any given tournament on tour?
Well, I think in today's game, it's a ball striking game. You know, I think the notion that you drive for show and putt for dough is false on the PGA Tour.
Hmm.
Like you, putting's important, right? But when Justin Thomas won here, he lost strokes putting. And so, like, you say that out loud, it's like, how does that even happen, right? What the consistent force is in professional golf is ball striking. And the number one stat that plays out is strokes gain approach. I mean, you have to be a solid iron player if you're going to give yourself multiple chances to win like the best players do. And so I think ball striking is number one. Now, I think number two, behind that, you know, the length aspect off the tee plays out. We know that, right? So strokes gain off the tee certainly is up there, and length plays a part of that, although it's probably leveled out a little bit at a place like this because it does take your driver out of your hand on certain holes. And then putting's in there, right? And so it's like, who are the most consistent and best ball strikers? And then that week, who putts the best is kind of where the wins come from. But then also, you got to have some fortune. I mean, look, you got to have some bounces and some luck. They'll tell you that. I think it's a fair number to say 10, 12% is luck. Some things happen that go your way. You know, you hit the ball and it's going over the tree and the tree knocks it down. It's by the cart path. You get relief and then you get a knock in the center of the green. You make a 25-footer for birdie. Like things like that that don't show up in the newspaper so much play out over 4 days. And so there's a little bit of that in there as well. But we're watching Rory hit an iron shot right now on 17, and you got to be able to strike your irons to have lasting power out here.
We were kind of talking about this yesterday in regards to Scotty, because Scotty seems like, you know, over the past couple of years, he's going to hit the ball well.
Yeah.
He's going to strike the ball well. Right. It's just a matter of, is he going to not be, you know, below average on, you know, putting?
Yeah.
You know, and if he's average or above average, he's going to win.
Right.
So that kind of speaks to that ball striking, you know, being king out there, and the fact that, you know, any given week he's going to bring that. It's just a matter of, does the flat stick perform?
I think it's a good point. I mean, Scotty's the number one player in the world, right? And is he a great putter? He's not. In fact, he's a subpar putter in the PGA Tour. You know, and so he's the number one player in the world and has really struggled putting. I mean, like, struggled. Now, not struggle me for one of us. Like, we'll take his ability to putt, but on those terms, he has struggled with the flat stick. Now, last week he wins API. He's done some work with Phil Kenyon. He went to the Mallet putter all of a sudden. Now, look, he's putted pretty good at Bay Hill before.
Yeah.
And so you take that in consideration. He putts good in Phoenix. Like, there's certain areas where he putts good on. We'll see how he does here and for the rest of the year. But I think it's a class. I think it's a great example. And I'll tell you, you could go through, and I had this conversation on our podcast, Stripe Show podcast, with Keith Stewart, who's on every two. We talk about this a lot. There's a lot of guys in the top half that are struggling with putting. Mm. I mean, Scotty's not alone. You know, we saw the struggle that Will Zalatoris went through. Now he's kind of coming out on the other thing. We saw the struggle that Jordan Spieth had. We've seen the struggle with Justin Thomas, Colin Morikawa. I mean, I can keep going. Hideki, not a great putter. Mm. Right?
Yeah.
These are the biggest names in golf. And what's their strength? It's not putting.
Yeah.
Are those mental lapses that happen, or is it, I mean, we joke at our level about yips and those things. I hate even saying the word, but there's got to be some focus lapses or mental struggles there.
You know, I think the answer to that question is probably different for each one of them.
Okay.
I don't think Scotty's ever been a great putter. I think he would admit that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
In fact, I think, you know, knowing some of the people in his camp, I think he has admitted that. And so Rory, is he a naturally gifted putter? I don't know. You know, like he's good, right? But is he Tiger putting? No. I mean, Tiger was a great putter.
Yeah.
That was Tiger. I mean, Tiger was dominant off the tee, long and straight, or long, straight at times. Number one iron player of all time. I mean, just ridiculous.
Like, who do you think the best putter is on the tour right now, active? Because I'm trying to think about it, and the list, you go down the list, you go, man, has it been like since Snedeker that we had like a truly amazing putter? Like, you know, where are they at?
I think the best putter on tour is Danny McCarthy.
Love that guy.
His coach was here the other night.
And his coach was here, about a couple nights ago, Brian Creekham, who was great on the podcast. And I found Brian because I saw the improvement of Denny in the other parts of his game, that he was going this way. And so I did some research, and Brian's an up-and-coming teacher. And so he's done a nice job. Now, Denny hasn't quite put it together again this year, but I think Denny's the best putter. I would say Taylor Montgomery's probably second.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
This field, so on the players, we keep hearing it's the number one field in golf, and that leads to kind of the live discussion, because we walked in yesterday through the players' entrance, and you're hearing the same audio, the greatest field in golf, and it used to be. What do you think it still is?
I mean, the PGA Championship is probably the best field in golf.
Okay, yeah.
If I had to point my finger to one tournament, I would say the PGA is.
Yeah.
Is the players in the top three probably still? Yeah,
like it. Is there a day that the LIV players get invited to this tournament coming soon? I mean, next has to be. Right?
Only if there's an agreement.
Merger.
You know, only if there's some kind of partnership that comes together. But without it, no. There's no way. And without it, who knows what the PGA Tour looks like, right?
True.
Because if it comes into a money game and spending, we clearly see the two business models are very different.
Yeah.
And so although they've raised a lot of capital to this point, the tour as of late, you know, does it compete with that kind of money over there? I don't think so.
No.
Not when you're spending $600 million on one player.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Let me just say that out loud, right?
Yeah.
And then you've already spent $300 on Cam Smith. I guess, you know, somewhere in there.
Yeah.
You know, probably 2.5 to Dustin and Brooks and Bryson was right in. You know, we just keep going down the list of these of these money grabs, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you're telling me that's a functional business model for golf? No, it's not.
Mm-hmm. No.
It's not even close. I mean, so, you know, there's got to be some kind of merge together, I think, for these guys to start playing together again.
Yeah. Because you can't, I don't think they can compete with it. I mean, if they want to go get more money, the LIV backers, you can go get more money. They have an endless supply, it seems, of
seems that cash. Way. And now they're involved in tennis.
Yeah.
They're going for the country club sweep, right? They want golf and tennis, and I'm sure pickleball is going to be right around the corner.
100%, the target market.
Yeah, it kind of feels like we've been having the same conversation about LIV ever since, you know. They basically broke onto the scene and started signing players away, you know, with the kind of the PIF involvement in the PGA Tour. Now I'm kind of confused, you know, cause it's like, okay, who actually, you know, owns what aspect of both tours? You know, the money seems to be now kind of coming from the same direction, but the investment into one tour versus the other is certainly imbalanced, because you have LIV over here signing all these players to millions and millions of dollars. And then the PIF kind of just being like, well, we're going to figure out what we're going to do over here with the PGA Tour. And then Jay's still standing there like, I'm in charge. But is he, you know?
Yeah. You know, I don't know. I think that's the frustrating thing. I don't think anybody knows.
Yeah.
Other than the conversations that are having behind closed doors. And we've seen the PGA Tour is not only at war with Liv, but I think there's a lot of internal battles going on right now. There's a lot of fighting going on right now. And there's a lot of survival happening, I think, in individual cases and saving face and those kinds of things mm-hmm. that are happening just on the front of the PGA Tour. So I think they have a lot of issues internally. You have players speaking out against the commissioner and saying, we have a hard time trusting the commissioner. He's got a long ways to go as a leader,
mm-hmm.
those types of things. And so there's a lot of, you know, headbanging going on right now, just right down the street here. Yeah. At headquarters.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And trying to figure out who they want to be. Mm. And then convincing the team around them that this is who we're going to be and this is where we're going.
Mm-hmm.
And having everybody on that ship moving forward. And so you got that, and then you have the PIF and now you're trying to wrestle them too, and arm wrestle, like, what's going to happen there? And do they really want to merge? I mean, I would think they do, but I don't know. I don't know what to believe anymore.
Yeah.
No one does. No one knows exactly what's happening behind those closed doors.
Now, I'm glad to see that the players that were figureheads, like Rory. I mean, it's great we're watching him tear it up right now. But
no kidding.
The idea that he's just going to get back to go play golf. Yeah. Like, the politics is kind of gone. My hot take as a conspiracy theorist would be that they're definitely going to be a World Golf League eventually. It has to be, right? And it's going to be one of those things, like everything else is, where George Soros is over here playing puppet and somebody else is playing puppet over here, and whoever has the most money wins. And we can just watch good golf, which we're all excited for good golf to get back. And this is going to air in a couple weeks, but you're going to Rory this first day and the first front nine he just played, or back nine. I'm glad to see it because, man, I'm so tired of the players, especially on tour, that passed up on money, that have just been interviews and doing things instead of practicing and playing golf like we used to.
It's exhausting.
Yeah.
It's exhausting. It's exhausting for us. I can't even imagine for a player.
Right? Exactly.
I can't even imagine for, like, Rory McIlroy, who was out there as basically the voice and the face of the tour mm-hmm. in the initial part of this, and saying, you know, what is this? And we need to rally. And, you know, he's mm-hmm. he's the PGA Tour. And then all of a sudden he wakes up one morning and the commissioner's on CNBC with Yasir signing like, wait, what?
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, I mean, can you imagine?
No.
Understandably, removes himself from that and goes, forget this. I'm just going to go play golf. I'm done being this figurehead for you guys. You know, I totally understand.
I think maybe with a clear mind, like what we're seeing right now, right? And, mm-hmm. you know, I've always said when the pedal's down with Rory and the pedal's down with Dustin Johnson, it's must-watch TV.
Yeah.
Because those dudes play at a level that...
So true.
Now, I think Scottie Scheffler is starting to enter that conversation.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. When the pedal's down with Scheffler and he's making putts, I mean, his ball striking is as good as we've seen
mm-hmm.
probably since Tiger.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's something about Rory that you kind of attract the two. And mm-hmm. I think even Dustin's so different and unique and just loping around and mm-hmm. like doesn't care. And he's like, oh, yeah, I'm just going to take it over to that tree at 3:30, you know, like, what? You know, and so, like, those two guys to me are must watch. And I think Scheffler's starting to enter that conversation.
So true.
Yeah.
Love it.
Going back to Jonah's question about kind of what defines a career and greatness, for the players specifically, what do you think winning this tournament historically has meant for a mm-hmm. player's career? And then now, has that changed?
I don't think it's changed for these guys. They know the field is not as strong. They know that, but they can't control that. This tournament matters. It's supported by the community. There's a lot of people out there. It's good energy. They know the golf course has a history. You look at the people that have won here, and Jack Nicklaus, Greg Norman. I mean, I know Greg's on the other side, but Greg was a fantastic player and a huge name in the sport.
Mm-hmm.
Tiger, Rory. We've mentioned these names. And so they want to win this. This is a big one for them. There's no doubt about it. And there's no asterisk next to it because Brooks isn't here and Bryson isn't here. You know, look, these guys that have changed have made the decision that legacy does matter. History does matter. There is something more to this than just money. Like they have. I mean, can you imagine the amount of money Rory's been offered?
Yeah. Mm.
Seriously. I mean, Rory's been offered probably more than Rahm.
Yeah.
Can you imagine the money that Hideki's been offered? It's got to be $600 million at least.
Yep.
Can you imagine the money JT, Spieth, Tiger has been... said, can you imagine saying, no, I'm good.
Yeah.
No, wait. $750 million. Right? $850 million.
Yeah.
I mean, seriously.
Yeah.
Can you imagine saying
that? Oh, and it's wired. I went to dinner with Dustin Johnson like a week after he signed. He's like, Kev, it was, I swiped a pen. I signed with a pen and it was in the account. Like baseball money. Right. Baseball player is the only one guaranteed that money. Yeah.
And God bless them, right? They took the money sure. and that's great. Yeah. Like, you know, I'm not sure I could say no.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's also true that, look, you're playing for money. Right, like what you're seeing here and what the players is about in the PGA Tour, and there is more to the game than just money. I know money's important, and for some it's number one. I get it, but there is more to the game than just money. And I think what you're seeing here plays out a little more that way, certainly on the PGA Tour side, than the LIV side.
Mm. It's interesting, you know. You're kind of talking about this at the party a little bit, like it's almost a generational thing where. Let's just use Tiger, for example, because we always use him as a goat in golf. The level of motivation that he had to win is just so much greater than really anyone I think we see playing golf today. Mm-hmm. So it's very interesting, you know, what motivates people to be great. Like, you know, the famous adage, you have to beat the best to be the best.
Yeah.
So I mean, your experience teaching, you know, the average player, teaching a professional player, how do you see motivation factoring into their journey?
For me, my motivation probably has changed over the 24 years. I mean, initially, I mean, I taught every day, all day for, you know, 16, 17 years and loved it, you know, a wide range of players from the Fred Funks of the world to someone just starting the game. But even through that stretch, I always liked the business side. Like I was, you know, I was running the PGA Tour Academy's brand in conjunction with that. You know, we had 26 teachers. And so I was in kind of charge of the curriculum and the training. And so there's always like the business aspect in addition to teaching that I was always kind of drawn towards. And so I think in doing that, I probably hit to a, I kind of got to a point where I was getting a little burnt out. You know, in the Florida heat and this and that every day, all day. And I was like, look, I love what I'm doing, the passion for it, but I need to kind of balance it out a little bit more. And so that's when I got into the media and went to work for Golf Channel, which was really a great experience for me. And getting that gig, it just opened up my eyes to a completely different aspect of the industry. And it helped my skill sets in other ways. And so to kind of do that and then take that experience and now kind of what I'm doing now, full circle with teaching as well, but also all the other things that we have in here, you know, it's a bigger business.
Yeah.
You know, rather than just the hourly rate and, you know, if I don't teach, I don't get paid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's, you know, it wears on you. And so you get motivated in different other ways. And for me, the media did and being able to monetize that. But then also just taking my business degree and background and saying, okay, let's take what I love in golf and try to create something that's a bigger business. And that's what we have in here now with multiple partners that use the studio. And we all kind of rally together for a bigger cause. And we can influence more people with other sectors of the business, like True Spec Golf, who's one of the best in fitting. We got Peak Performance. They start in here in May. They're excellent in the world of fitness. And then all the corporate events that we do in here, it's a full circle business rather than just an hourly rate.
Love it. No, it's great. That pivot makes sense. We've had a lot of business discussions on here too. And that's good to know because you want to be well-rounded.
Yeah.
There's not many goats that aren't well-rounded. There's not many goats that don't find. We had a great Leo Herrera. It's awesome. But staying connected to, like, what makes you happy, staying connected to what's going to get you up in the morning, especially in these times as the next generation struggles with hope and struggles with what's the country, who runs the country, who runs the economy, and there's just so much doubt and lack of hope. But if you're not centered and you're not figuring out like, hey, what's next? What makes me happy? What am I good at? What do I need to get better at? And then try to work on those things. You just spoke to it in those, and you've built a heck of a business here, which is awesome.
Well, I think you have to, you have to find, you have to find what makes you happy, right? And what you're good at.
Yeah.
And then you have to really explore that and you have to let that flourish. And I think, you know, like a lot of the guys that teach on tour and they elected that as their avenue and what really motivated them and the guys that do really well out there and they have multiple players and they travel 30 weeks and this and that. I mean, it's, you know, they're great at that area of the instruction business. Right. And they can relate and speak to the experiences with the best players in the world and what that all means and bring the technological side to it as it fits with each player. So that's like that, but that's just one avenue. Right. And that's what I tell, like a lot of teachers will reach out to me and I'll say, look, that's just one avenue. That was never the avenue for me. That didn't motivate me. In fact, and the reason is because I frankly would get bored with it. You know, and I just like not bored with the people I was working with, just the idea of, you know, working with a, you know, kind of traveling around with two people, like was,
you were kept. Yeah.
Yeah. It just wasn't for me. Never was. And if it was, I would have spent more time in the back of the range without TPC Sawgrass. Now we had guys that were working for me that did. And they traveled and have done a really good job with it. And that's what motivates them. It's what fuels them, makes them feel good, right? And so that's great. But it just wasn't for me. And I always tell people, like, it may not be for you either. You know, maybe what's for you is what you do at your place, and the membership that you have and working with them, and you have a wide range of players. And then maybe there's a, and for others, it's a social media play. And for others, it's the club fitting sector. And for others, they want more fitness aspects of it. You know, so it's, you have to find your niche. I think you have to go with it. I think for me, I've always, I don't know why this is. And Kevin, you could probably attest to this, but I've always, my whole career, I feel like what's kind of motivated me and what's interested me is like, I find like, oh, here's all my employees going one way. They're like, yeah, we're going to work with tour players. And I'm like, I'm going the other way, you know? And like, even it goes back to, the younger, when I was younger, like, you know, I never got into the PGA, you know, and like everybody's running to do the PGA. And I'm like, I don't know. You know, I got PGA members looking at me, telling me all of them like, yeah, they're just kind of behind in how they teach people how to teach. I'm like, well, why would I do that?
Yeah.
You know, and like everybody's going to run and do the PGA. And I'm like, well, I'm going to go do this certification.
Yeah.
You know, and so I don't know, you know, it's like, I've always, for whatever reason, find myself maybe kind of trailblazing a different way when everybody's kind of running the other way. Not on purpose. It's just the way my mind is. And that, I guess, exploration kind of is interesting to me and motivates me to develop that. Because this, like this project for me, this is a very unique place and I'm proud of it. And there's not a lot of, there's probably not many of these in the country. It's, but putting it together is what really gets me excited.
Yeah.
Like putting the business together and putting people in position to succeed is what's really fun for me.
Amazing. Nice. No, that's another characteristic of GOATS is going in the opposite direction of where the crowd is going. You see that a lot. Well, I love Elon Musk. I mean, imagine this guy. Read up on beyond what we know about Elon Musk. He is, from the beginning, gone the opposite direction of everyone around him.
Yeah.
And it's funny, we heard, who was some comedian that was like, I think it was Cat Williams on the Shannon Sharp show. He was like, this guy's shooting rockets and telling the government after, or like they don't even know. He's just sending stuff up there and there's no, he doesn't work for the government. No. Don't even have a tie to the government. Yeah. And he's changing the world. He's going to provide the world free Wi-Fi and the whole world.
Yeah.
Like Amazon is going to have Wi-Fi when Starlink's done. It's crazy. But yeah, you've done that as well, and I love to hear it because we have PGA members. Both of us are PGA associates and went down that path, and the money that is poured in on that side. And God bless them. There is definitely a path. The PGM programs are great. We have a lot of listeners at that young age.
No doubt.
But try to get, I mean, I go back to what we just talked about, is there's a common denominator of wanting to get better, wanting to improve people around you, and wanting to improve systems in place. And it's the grind. Mm. I mean, there's no goat that didn't grind. There's no goat that didn't try to make things better around or find a salt. A businessman finds a problem and creates a solution for that problem. That's a business. And it's been awesome to do it because you're coaching people that want to get better. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a whole other aspect of golf. You know, we all know that there's a businessman that wants to go out with clients and do better and play better at golf to survive around with clients and impress them. And then you got guys that are trying to make a living golfing, and you've coached both. You've seen it all.
I think just from a business standpoint and people listening, that you have to go through the grind. You have to go through the pain just like you go through the success. Mm. You have to. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you can't, it's just, it's not one way. It's not always, you're not always winning. Mm-mm. Right? Now, you better be winning more than you're losing, right?
Mm, yeah.
But you're not always winning. I used to always say this to some of my teachers, and even to this day, and when I talk to just people in business in general, I said, people are going to tell you no. They're going to tell you no. Okay? And you better get used to hearing that. Mm. But it's okay. You know, you got to keep going. Mm-hmm. Because someone's going to say yes. And then as that happens, then you build relationships with those people. Yeah. And even when they say no, but the timing might be wrong, you mm-hmm. know, and the details might be wrong. But you can't just fall back and all of a sudden, oh, what a dick.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, like you have to, it's just part of it. Yep. You know, like there's going to be failure. And I'll say the critical moment for me was I had a great run at Golf Channel. And then all of a sudden, out of the blue, this was the beginning when they moved out of Orlando. And the beginning of kind of the, I would say, you know, the Golf Channel is not what it used to be. Let's put it that way.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. And like Morning Drive was cranking. We had an awesome team. I was down there like 2-3 days a week and doing another show and doing digital. It was getting going. And then out of the blue, they're like, hey, we're not going to renew a contract. All the part-time is done. You know, and then it went full-time. And then pretty soon, they shipped it up to Connecticut.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so it hit me like a ton of bricks. Like, I was totally not expecting it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, wow. You know, like, we're going this way. And then all of a sudden, we're like,
yeah.
You know, and it put me in a tough spot. Real tough spot. And so I remember at that time, I was like, man, you know, this is just part of it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, at the time I was pissed and, you know, I was like, what the hell? This, mm-hmm. you know, this guy's a dick.
Yeah.
But then, like, you take a step back, you're like, okay, you know, there's just, this is business. Yeah. This is the way the world works.
Yeah.
And you got to get yourself back off on your feet and you got to figure out what's next and continue to build off of those experiences. And that's what kind of, you know, eventually, fast forward 3-4 years from now, we're sitting right here.
Yeah.
But it's all part of it, man. I tell you, you can't just curl up into a ball when someone says no or something happens. Mm. If you're going to be great and you're going to push yourself to be the best, you can't just be like, hey, let's go party because we won and this guy did a deal today.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to be willing to pick yourself back up when someone says no or like, hey, we're not going to do this deal anymore. Mm-hmm. You got to go find someone that's going to say yes.
Yeah. Yep. That, if you fast forward in those scenarios too, like you just said, you probably go thank that guy. Thank goodness.
Yeah.
Thank goodness you cut. And I wasn't tied to you for the last 4 years. And I just did this on my own. No, that's such a good word because we have the same thing. I mean, I've had mentors that have shared
told
the same
me,
thing.
You've told me, but yeah.
It's amazing.
Exactly, yeah.
I want to go thank the no's. The guys that said no, I want to be like, thank you so much because you made me do this. And evaluation's a big part of it. When you get knocked down, you fall 7, get up 8, you get knocked down, you got to evaluate. That's where people, and I think the next generation doesn't do, is why did we get knocked down?
Right.
Why did we fall down? Why didn't I expect this?
Right.
Why did the carpet get pulled underneath me? While they were bowing at my feet, they weren't really bowing at my feet. They were getting ready to pull the carpet right out from underneath me with some things I've learned. So evaluate when you fall down and then get back up. Stronger
and I'll tell you a piece of advice and I'll say his name and everyone knows who he is, Michael Breed. He was there with me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so Michael's always been very good to me. And when it all happened, and then Michael's show, he ended up eventually moving on.
Yeah.
But we were talking and he he kind of gave me some tough love at the time. And I wasn't ready to hear it at the moment. And he was like, you know, he goes, it's unfortunate, but he's like, you know what? There was a lot of great stuff. He goes, but at the end of the day, maybe it wasn't good enough. Like maybe what you were doing wasn't good enough.
Hmm.
I was like, quite say it like that, but it was a little softer than that.
Yeah.
But it got to the point, and I think what he was trying to do is to get me to look in.
Hmm. Yeah.
You know, which I wasn't necessarily ready to do for. At the time.
Yeah.
But then as I turned it in my brain for a couple weeks and didn't talk to him for a while, you know, I was like, all right, like, it's good advice. Like, he was like, you know what? You have to look in and figure out maybe what was missing. And I think that's helped me to this day.
Yeah, it's huge. I mean, I had a scenario like that, and I'll just briefly, I think a word I look at is I got comfortable.
Yeah.
I got comfortable at some point, maybe. Or maybe I gave the perception that I was comfortable to my bosses or to my overhead. And you see that a lot now.
Yeah.
The players that get comfortable, the coaches that get comfortable, the businessmen that get comfortable. Amazon comes in and wipes you out. If you get comfortable, don't get comfortable. If you want to be great.
Yeah.
And that's such a good word.
See, the balance for me is like pushing, like I'll push. And especially as an entrepreneur, I'll push, like what's next. Like my mind just keeps going. And so balancing that in a way that I can be functional at home.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Has been another learning curve for me.
For sure.
Yeah.
You know, where I'm not just always thinking about it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm not present at home with family and kids and all that. So it's just all a learning curve and trying to be the best you can be, but also be where you need to be, not only physically, but also just
mentally
mm-hmm. present.
Please tell me when you figure that out, because I struggle
Kevin
with
needs
that.
A lot
my
of
wife,
help with that.
My wife constantly is like, you're not present.
It's hard.
And I'm like, I know.
Yeah, it's hard.
Just can't turn it off.
It's a male gene. I mean, we have a hard time doing more than we can do more than one thing at a time, but it's the idea of doing those things and also being present to those that probably know us best, right?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. No, it's so true.
You can't fool them.
No.
At least I can't. True. I'm not good at it at all.
They know us too well. Me either. Yeah. So true.
So I'm curious. Obviously, your golf mind is pretty expansive.
Mm-hmm.
You're familiar with a lot of tour swings. This doesn't really apply to me, but I know these guys need a lot of help with their game.
Yeah.
Kind of a multifaceted question. So you see, just for example, like last year on the tour, the top three guys have like the most unconventional swings you've seen. Scotty, Victor, we're watching him right now, John Rahm, all different, all very unconventional. Tiger, more technical, more conventional. It's kind of fascinating to me that, you know, golf doesn't benefit one sort of swing. Second to that, you know, as an instructor, you're typically, or at least in my experience as an instructor as well, you're trying to teach that more technical, conventional sort of swing. Obviously everybody's got their, you know, different sort of swing styles. What do you feel like is the most effective way, you know, for a listener who struggles with their game, who has an unconventional swing, what's the way to go? Are you working with what they have? You're working with the mold? Are you trying to reinvent the mold?
Yeah. I think every teacher has to have a baseline of, you know, you see it a way, right? Like what would be a pattern that you could kind of hang your hat on that would give an amateur that plays once a month, once a week, whatever, the highest probability of impact, you know?
Hmm.
And so then you start looking at the components of club face and the path of the club head and how the body moves and all these things that go into a golf swing that I could talk about for hours. And so you look at those things and, okay, I kind of like it here and I kind of like it here and I kind of like it here and I kind of like it here, as you kind of go through these positions and the body's moving. And so it's like, is it a method? I think to some degree it is. And I think for teachers, most teachers have a hard time admitting that. that I'm not a method teacher, right? You know, it's like that's you'll hear that I'm not method. I just kind of, you know, teach the student. And I think there is some truth to that because every student's different, right? And they have different flaws. And so you assess those flaws and then you fix those flaws. So that's different for every person. But I do think every teacher has some ideals. I just believe that. Even the ones that are good friends of mine that are at TBC right now will tell me into my face, no, I'm not. And yet I look at a lot of their swings and there's a ton of similarities, right? And a lot of the people that they teach. And so I think at the amateur level, some of those ideals come out because they're not as skilled. They're not as talented. And so you have to, and they're coming to you as a 15 handicap and they're saying, I suck. I'm hitting it to the right. I hit it fat. I do this. I do that. And they're paying you money to do that. And so you have to, what are you going to look at them and say, you know what? Just swing your swing.
Yeah.
And you know, that's great. Great. Good. Just swing. Like, you know, like it can't be insanity, right? Like you got to change something.
Yeah.
And so you change something in a way that you see fit that kind of, I do think kind of fits towards your ideals. Now, with that said, the other side of that is when you're working with the super highly skilled, the most skilled players of them all, right? And I think when you work with a player like on the PGA Tour, which I think your three examples are really good, because they are all kind of unique. There's a genius inside of that person. Okay, we're talking about goats. There's a genius inside of these guys, okay, and women, and you got to protect it. And so you got to be very sensitive to what you do. And I've been pretty vocal about Victor Hovland to this point, about him having seven coaches since he turned pro. There's a picture of Vic and I right there. I played with him right before he turned pro at API in the Pro-Am. Okay, that's picture. So that's Victor right there. He's in his Oklahoma State stuff. Okay?
Yeah.
And so in that picture, he was the U.S. amateur champ. Okay, and turns pro, and Victor's won six times at this point. He's had seven coaches. It's like, why? Right? You know, and it's like, you're already one of the best players in the world. Like, do you really need that much help? Yeah. You know, like really, at the end of the day, do you really need that much help? Now, his short game did, and he went and seeked it, and Joe Mayo did a great job.
Yeah, yeah, I got way better.
Yes. And it wasn't a weakness anymore, and he wins the tour championships on top of the world. He's the best player in the world. I mean, he wasn't official World Golf ranking, but he was, at the end of the year, he was the best player. Mm-hmm. Fast forward, Joe's not there anymore, new teacher. He's yesterday just on the range. I'm watching him. Like, to me, you're messing with the genius at that point.
Yeah.
And the best to ever not mess with the genius was Butch Harmon.
Yeah.
He was the best saying, what do you do? I know maybe it doesn't fit my ideals, but it's okay. And you're telling me your miss is this, and I've seen it. Okay, so let's just... You know what? Let's move the ball just a little more forward and let's just hit a couple more cuts since you're drawing it. Okay. You know, like simple, practical, sometimes maybe a little more wholesale changes. And I can remember as a young teacher, I used to, because I watch this stuff, I'm kind of a nerd, like, and I like talking to coaches. I like to hear their perspective. And I can always remember when I was young, I would watch Butch Harmon's students and he would go on Golf Channel or whatever, and he would say, yeah, we're working on A and B. And I'm watching A and B, and then the guy would go play, and I wasn't seeing A and B. And, like, Phil Mickelson was a great example. Like, he'd always try to keep – like, hey, Phil, let's just keep a little more flexion in your left knee. Don't straighten it so much. And when Phil would go out and play, his left leg was straight, you know, just cranking straight, club pass parallel.
Yeah.
Hey, what are you guys working on? 2 weeks later, we're working on keeping the flexion in the knee and shortening them up a little bit. He'd go play. It's like,
yeah, that's
but
funny.
But yet Phil would be playing and winning at elite. Like,
yeah.
So there's this weird dynamic of protecting a genius, which I don't think, I don't know if I am the best to talk to what that's all about.
Yeah.
Which would be, I think Rick Smith would be. I think there's some guys out here right now that are doing a pretty good job of that. I think Mark Blackburn's kind of starting to go down that path a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's a different conversation here. And I'm always really, really nervous when I see players like Victor Hovland jumping around. because he's already a genius. Mm-hmm. And it's like, what are you doing, man? Like, yeah. And this is no slight on any of the coaches.
No,
for sure. They are brilliant.
For sure.
It's just, I want to look at him like, why?
Yeah.
Why, man?
I feel like Spieth kind of went through some of that. I don't know what kind of swing coach changes he's had, but he's definitely had swing changes.
Who?
Right, Spieth.
Yeah,
oh, Jordan
had
the same thing. I don't know how many times he changed.
His pre-shot routine last year was brutal to watch.
Wild.
Well, absolutely brutal.
Spieth went down the rabbit hole of trying to get more distance. Mm. And through that journey, he started getting the club shaft more laid off. And so with the club shaft more laid off, all of a sudden that club pitch is differently coming down. And it's just that club face is a different kind of management of the face versus how he used to swing it.
Mm-hmm.
And then as he went down that path of trying to get more distance, he lost his putter.
Mm-hmm.
And so all of a sudden, now where are you? And that's what happens. Mm. You lose the genius. And look, Spieth is not anywhere close to the player that he was back in 17 and 18.
No way.
Not even close. And you hate to say it. I mean, mm-hmm. it's just like I think he's wasted mm-hmm. some years of his career.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think you could say the same thing with Tiger. Tiger's just a different animal when he changed his stuff, but he lost a couple years when he did it.
Yeah.
And he just got back to number one anyway. So it's like, why'd you change it?
Yeah.
And that's the funny thing. Like, some of these guys that do come out on the other end, they're like, well, now look at him. I was like, well, that's where he was in the first place.
Right.
Like, true.
You know?
So true.
Yeah, why'd you go backwards? But, I mean, I remember Rory did an interview, talked about this too. Even he got trapped into the speed and distance thing. He was the longest driver of the golf ball on tour.
Bryson.
Right. And Bryson comes out and freaks him.
Yep.
And then he's losing his swing because he's trying to get more. And then he realized, he was like, I'm already really long.
Yeah.
I don't need this. You know, like, I'm just going to play
it's
my
life.
Game.
We chase it.
So the story goes, when they came back from COVID
and
the first event was at the Colonial, Charles Schwab, they played a practice round. And I think Bryson was 30 past him. And so, you know, that was, whoa. You know, and Rory's like, what, 330? So you think about that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's another stratosphere of speed. It's funny. These guys, I almost feel like, and I talk to a lot of people about this, it's how do you protect them from themselves almost. You know, they are exposed to so much. It's human nature to be curious, to tinker. I think they get bored.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's trying to find something that they think is, this is it. You know, and now you're intrigued with this, and it kind of motivates you and it takes you down this rabbit hole. But let me tell you something. You know, on my podcast, we celebrate some of the good, or a lot of the good that does happen, you know, and like incremental improvements. I think there's way more bad.
Mm-hmm.
I think when they start changing, they start tinkering. I think there's way more bad. I'm gonna Ricky Fowler.
Mm-hmm.
Another example, right?
Yeah.
I'm gonna all of a sudden take this and try to get the club more over here. And it's like, okay. I mean, that's, you know, I'm going to take my hip instead of going here and move it over. You know, you start, there's some wholesale, there's some changes, and then there's some wholesale changes.
Yeah.
And when you start going wholesale, that's when I just start.
Yeah.
Like, no.
Yeah. I see that a lot on Twitter. You know, Travis, you got to commend you. You're a great Twitter follow. And, you know, I've seen you call that out on there quite often. Mm-hmm. And it's almost always, you know,
not without accurate pushback either. You know, I have
sure.
I get coaches that'll call me.
Yeah, I bet.
You know, from the podcast or from it and challenge me. And like, why? You know, it's like, well, it's just how I feel.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, it's my opinion. But I also value maybe, you know, I want to hear what you have to say and where you're coming from. And like Scotty Scheffler's, like the pod that I did with Brad Faxon, you know, we had a couple coaches call us afterwards. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, some of the best coaches in the game.
Mm-hmm.
They were not happy with the direction of the pod. And it's like, okay, I value your opinion. I do, because I think you're one of the best in the game.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, I feel like I'm coming from an educated spot.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm coming from a researched place of opinion rather than what we see on Twitter is just, oh, he's...
Yeah. I don't want to hear it.
I know. You know where I'm going, right? Yeah, right. It's exhausting, right?
Yeah, no, you give your opinion and then it's the earmuffs. Like, I don't want to hear anyone else's opinion.
Yeah.
And that's why you've gotten where you're at, because that's a keyboard warrior. If you're not going to listen to the opposition or have a good conversation about it or answer the phone call when the coach you just kind of discussed, it doesn't, that's not any growth. There's no growth there.
Yeah, and it always, you know, the conversation can go sometimes in a way where it feels like a coach is being slighted, right?
Yeah.
And that's never my intent, ever. But it can come across that way. And I realize that, you know, depending upon what the guest is talking about, it can go, the conversation can go places. Mm-hmm. And so, like, you know, it just seems like about three times a year, you know, pod drops.
Yep.
And it's, you know.
I mean, that's what happens when you sit down and have these, you know, open discussions for, you know, hours upon end sometimes. Things are going to come up and opinions are going to get said. And it's just, but if we can't have that, what do we have? You know, we have to be able to discuss all these things, you know, the live stuff, players, coaches. Just, it's just part of, you know, developing opinions and coming
Golf's
to a
hard,
conclusion.
Man.
Golf is hard.
I don't know how these guys do it for a living. I have zero clue. I have a little bit of experience working with some of these guys. And I'll say this, Fred Funk's a dear friend of mine. I love Fred. He's done so much for me. And I worked with him for, I don't know, 7, 8 years.
Awesome.
And his son, when he was here, he's a great player. Went to Texas, and he's now on the Korn Ferry Tour. Yeah, he's got status. Yeah, he's on the Korn Ferry Tour this year. So, and I just, you know, I watch Fred. You want to talk about Go? You should get Fred on this podcast.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
I mean, here's a guy that's, you know, undersized, not a lot of speed, and won 9 times on the PGA Tour. Won the Players. Oldest to do it.
Yeah.
It's won 9 times on PGA Tour champions, right? I mean, you want to talk about working? You want to talk about, like, being told no and defeated and, like, I'll outwork you. Mm-hmm. You know, I know you're 30 past me, but I'm going to outwork you. Mm. I'm going to hit my hybrid straighter than your 9-iron. And I watch it, and it's the damnest thing you've ever seen in your life.
Yeah.
Like, I've never seen anything like it. I mean, that guy hits it so straight, it's stupid.
That's crazy.
I mean, it's stupid how straight he hits it. But I just watched the work ethic from that guy, and I watched the relentless pursuit of, yes, success, great. Oh, I didn't play very good. Let's get back to work. Mm. You know, just...
Love it.
And then, but then, you know, just where golf takes him mentally and... you know, it's just, man, it's crazy, man. These guys, I got a lot of respect for these guys playing professionally. I got a lot of respect for these guys out there coaching and how hard they work.
Yeah.
Because golf's hard, and you're going to fail at this game so much.
Yep.
And it's hard to swallow that pill sometimes. You know, especially with the amount of time as a coach you put in, like they put in with these guys.
Yeah. It's a game of inches or centimeters, they say it. I mean, the reason I started with Goated, I didn't tell you, but from the 40 handicap that I'll play with, I got family members, people just picking up the clubs, and I've played with Korn Ferry guys and MLB players and all of them, okay? Even Korn Ferry Tour players that I've been able to play with. Mental toughness was amazing to me, especially in around the green. And then I did research on what club was recycled the most or collected the most, and that's a putter. So we started with putters. But if you're standing over a putt, and you don't have any confidence. I've seen guys that I hand the Goated putter to that are terrible golfers and start making putts because it's just it's a mental change.
Yeah.
I have a dinged up TaylorMade. I can't afford it. Or I can't. This is my dad's and whatever. And then you hold something and whatever it is, it's the same weight. It could be. But if you mentally see things going in or have the confidence, things start to go. Same thing with wedge play. We had a guy that was like someone that impacted me to start this was. Yeah, I'm a basketball coach. I coached college basketball as a grad assistant and played or coached high school basketball. You can make a free throw if you have a bad thought. If you're having a terrible day, it can clank in. You can hit the side of the backboard and it accidentally goes in. There ain't a chance in golf if you're thinking about the water to hit a good shot.
Yeah.
If you're just trying to hit the center of the green or whatever and there's no positive thought. But, yeah, you're right. I respect the heck out of these guys. Last week at API watching JT hit over fans – over the house.
that was wild.
A row of six rows of fans over trees, blind shot. We would have killed somebody.
Yeah.
Straight somebody at right people. All I'm thinking about is not hitting those people.
Yeah.
You know, and then that's when you hit them.
Yes. So and then four straight days of it. You got to be solid for 4 straight days. And really, if you're trying to, the Monday qualifier chasers are the ones that I respect even more. You got to play 7 straight days.
Mini tours.
No, it's awesome. Well, one or two things. The first thing I want to get to real fast. What are some of your life principles that have helped you get to this point? Mine, I'll give an example, would be faith, freedom, family, and those things that are mm-hmm. and have good people, do what you love, those basic things.
Yeah. But
what are some of yours?
I mean, obviously, my family is first and foremost, and I think in some ways, like I'm a little bit of kind of a free spirit and kind of follow my heart, which I know is kind of cliche, but it's always been kind of just my compass of does it feel right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, does it feel right internally with the people that I'm talking to and the endeavor that I'm about ready to go down?
Love it.
You know, and so I've always kind of followed pretty close to that. And I think secondly, you know, just is just kind of trusting myself, you know, like just mm-hmm. trust myself in what I'm seeing and in what I think. Right. And I think in today it's easy to kind of get persuaded and pushed off to some degree. And I think just staying true to what you really believe and what you really want to say, right? And what your real opinion is, and just stay true to that. Because it's easy to come off of that, and the examples of someone doesn't see it your way, and they're like, well, you know, you need to see, okay, well, I'm going to listen to you. And persuaded, yeah. I mean, I think you got to be willing to listen to someone and accept the fact that maybe, you know what, you're probably right. You know, I need to come your way a little bit more. But I think my point is that we do have a belief in yourself, right? And I think you have to stay true to that. And you have to trust the fact that what you're doing is right and is in the best interest for your family, right? And what is going to be beneficial for you long term.
Yeah.
And I think with that said comes some risk.
For right? sure.
And I think like and I believe this, a lot of people kind of fall short there. Then they're not willing to take that step. They're not willing to take on a small amount of risk or some, you know, and take that next step to push forward and say, I'm actually doing what I really want to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and sometimes it's like leaving a job that maybe pays a little more than the job you really want. Yeah. You know, and it's like, you know, and I've had this conversation, you know, many times with my wife, who's super talented, works for Vineyard Vines now, and she worked for the PGA Tour for 13 years. And as she was kind of pursuing, like, you know, at some point, like for you to maximize who you are, you've got to go do something different.
Yeah.
You know, and you have so many connections. You want to talk about networking? You want to talk about connections? My wife's the king of it.
Love it.
I mean, like the king of it. And so got to put yourself out there, right? And so putting yourself out there for a lot's uncomfortable. And like it's, you take on that risk and, you know, what is someone going to say or, you know, and like who cares? Just get out there.
Yeah.
You know, and as you start putting yourself out there, you know what? You realize there's a whole world out there.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a whole world that wants to know your opinion and what you think. And they want to hear about your experience and what you bring to the table.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden that opens up more doors. And you're like, then 2 years later, you look back like, what the hell was I doing? You know, like.
Yeah.
Right. And then you feel good about that. But you know how many people that don't? How many people that won't put themselves out there and just take on a small amount of risk to just see what's out there?
So true.
And so anyway, so I think those are some of the things that I've kind of stay close to me. And I think the final thing is just, you know, surrounding yourself with people that know more than you.
Yeah.
You know, and that can teach you something and that can push you in a way that maybe you weren't thinking that way before, you know? And I think for me, honestly, that one very well might be the most important.
So true.
I mean, seriously, that one might be the most important, is like not just surrounding people that I know and I'm comfortable with and maybe, you know, like you're the boss and, you know, like, but people that are like, oh, he's the boss. Like he, you know, that dude's, I need to know what he's doing.
Yeah,
right.
So true.
Or what's she talking about? Like that's interesting.
Yes.
And so that's, I think, surrounding yourself around those people that know what you don't is huge.
If you're the smartest in the room, you're in the wrong room.
Or you're probably in Phil's room. You're in Phil Mickelson's room.
I love it. Those are great. That's I mean, you always hear hiring your weaknesses and putting good people around you. I'm blessed to have these guys, skill sets that I've and we have people I pray for. I'm like, hey, I really need this. I really need a good person that mm-hmm. is good at social media, but someone that's going to lift up the team, be yeah. a good team member, a teammate, and make us all better. And I think that's huge. We're all gifted with discernment. Is that trusting your heart inside? And it's funny. And the last thing I'll say on this is Rogan's show a couple episodes ago, Chris sent me, was awesome. But I want to touch on, like, we talk about trailblazers, and it actually isn't, for those listening, I don't think it's something that everyone should aspire to be. You got to see what your skills are.
That's right.
There are roles for people that don't no need doubt. To be. It was great. They were talking mm-hmm. about, like, how we've medicated tons of people with Adderall that can't focus, right? Mm-hmm. But if I could hire someone that was ADHD right now that wasn't medicated, I could put them in a position that what they were made with would be the perfect position. Mm-hmm. I mean, they talk about military, people that are in the military would be great if they mm-hmm. weren't medicated with that. Like, there's, God's made you perfectly for your purpose. Find out what you love and then follow these things you hear on these podcasts from these great people we have. We're blessed to know. So I wanted to touch on that because, the trailblazer thing is huge. And if you are and you're not comfortable, but putting yourself out there, putting yourself around good people, listening to your heart is true for everybody. That's a great word.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
The second thing we like to do is kind of get the greatest of all time. Let's do golfer first, but then athletes. Who would be your GOAT? Everyone talks about basketball for whatever reason. Michael Jordan, I think, started that, or football, but golf first. Some GOATs.
Oh, wow. I mean, Tiger's the GOAT. Love it. In my eyes. I mean, on the golf course, he's the GOAT.
Love it.
I mean, it's the greatest stretch of golf that's ever been played. It was ridiculous to be in the business watching that. I mean, he held all four major championships and the Players at the same time. I mean, that's just like, come on.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's ridiculous.
Yeah.
I mean, all four majors, and people and he had the Players too.
Yeah. That's crazy.
So you talk about.
I didn't know that.
So that's just silly. Now I know, like, I wasn't there and didn't watch Jack in the same mm-hmm. set of eyes and same time in my life. So I'll say that. But Tiger is no question the GOAT. As far as, like, my idol in like sports was Ken Griffey Jr. I mean, I grew up in the Pacific Northwest.
I love it.
And so Griffey was everything. I mean, I taught myself one thing, how to do left hand, and that was hit a baseball. That's it. You know, and so I absolutely mirrored everything playing baseball around Griffey. And so come to find out, that was a really good thing to do for my golf game too, because I play golf right hand and play baseball left handed.
Mm-hmm. Wow. That's crazy.
That's amazing. So Griffey's like, you know, he's my guy, you know, when it comes to sports.
Love it.
But I think in golf, like, you know, you look at goats. I mean, to me, there's one goat in golf, and that's Tiger. But you look at, like, today's game, like, who are some of the guys that I gravitate to and that I really like? I mean, I'm a huge fan of this new kid, of Ludvig Åberg. You know, I've had him on my pod. I've gotten to know him a little bit over the last year. I think he's a really special kid, you know, and he's so talented, yet he's so grounded.
Mm-hmm.
But he's confident. Hmm. You know, he's got swag. I mean, he's a good looking kid. He's walking around. He's got the confidence.
Yeah.
Silly game. He's already won on tour. Like this kid. Like, and so I went out there and had my son with him, and I know him a little bit. And I saw him. He came over and we chatted, and I got a picture with my son. And, like, I wanted my son to see him.
Yeah.
And talk to him and hear him talk.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, like, and Scottie Scheffler to me is like, is phenomenal. I know he's the number one player in the world, but he is right now. He is the best player in the game right now, mm-hmm. hands down. There's nobody that strikes the ball like he does. Nobody. Mm-hmm. Rory's great. He ain't Scotty.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He's got the firepower, but he's not Scotty.
Yeah.
And you get that putter going, no one's beating him, right? Like you were saying, mm-hmm. no one's beating him. So I think in today's game, like Scotty and Ludwig, and I remember I was driving home last night and I was like, you know, all this crap that we talk about in pro golf, and it's annoying. PGA Tour live, and it beats you down. It's exhausting.
Yeah.
And I just, you know, and I walk away, and I'm fortunate enough to know a lot of these guys, and I got to see a lot of them, and I watch them interact with the fan. I'm like, these dudes are great, man.
Yeah.
These dudes are really good dudes.
Yeah.
I mean, they really are. I mean, I can't tell you, and we sat there for, we sat there for 4.5 hours on the range, okay? And just about saw everybody.
Yeah.
And I can't tell you one person that I'm like, I can't believe he just, I mean, seriously, like all of these guys.
Yeah.
Like we're fortunate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're really good. Victor Hovland is a good dude.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Rory McIlroy is a really good dude. Now, you may not like some of the things that he has to say about, hey, we want to shrink this. And, you know, that doesn't make him a jerk.
No.
It doesn't make him an asshole. It doesn't make him a bad person. It just means that you maybe disagree with that aspect of what he just said.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the day, when you're out there and you watch these guys, you're like, man, these guys are great, man.
Yeah.
These guys are really good people.
Love it.
And so we're in a good spot from that standpoint. And unfortunately, that's not talked about enough in today's verbiage.
Mm-hmm.
But Griffey's the man. There's no one like him.
Yeah, love that. Have you got to play with him or?
I haven't. Interact? I got to meet him
a
couple times. And so yeah, he's interesting. He loves golf. We were talking.
Yeah, he does.
These athletes, man.
Yeah.
These athletes love golf.
Mm-hmm.
But in the world of Seattle sports, like he put it on the map. You know, like the Supersonics were good when I was young.
Yeah.
That was it.
Yeah.
And the Mariners had a little run there and Griffey got there and this and that. But he put like he was the star.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, like he was the man in sports.
He's a goat for sure.
Yeah.
He's in Orlando. We're working on a collab.
You should get him,
collab with him right now on a putter.
I was there. I was in the kingdom when he broke his wrist on the Spider-Man catch.
Oh, yeah.
We were in that game, yeah. Yeah, when he jumped up there and he put both feet on the ground, and he caught it like that in his wrist, and he fractured his wrist. Yeah.
You were there.
Yeah, Spider-Man catch, yeah. That's when he jumped up both feet hit the ball.
Yeah, yeah.
Crazy.
That's awesome.
That was insane, that catch. And he would rob someone like every he would rob someone like every month.
Yeah.
Like he would just sit there and wait the ball, and then he would jump up and like
– yeah. Defender.
He was the best at that,
too.
He was amazing. Like
every single month he would do that.
Yes. His swing was unorthodox, too. It was a different swing for that time, and he trailblazed
that. Oh, man,
I can't imagine how many coaches, actually, now that I think about it, probably were like, let me fix this swing.
Yeah, I don't know at the time. I don't know about maybe in the 90s, but maybe.
Yeah, true.
So now pretty, though. His swing. Oh.
But the science behind it, I think, looking back, they've said, like, that's, like, the worst. Like, to be able to attack a ball upward.
Really? Yeah.
They're saying, but, man, nothing prettier. Follow through the image of his logo. That's a good one. We haven't heard that one. It's a new goat.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah, well, he was I don't know if he was the greatest of all time. He's certainly one of them. But he was, you know, he was my idol, you know, as an athlete growing up.
Love it.
Sean Kemp.
Yeah, the
Remember
Supersonics.
Him?
Yeah. There were some guards I loved. I mean, I grew up in
Gary
the
Payton 80s. Was,
Gary Payton, the glove.
Gary Payton the was glove. A good player. Well, the Sonics, I mean, they could have won it all. I mean, they won it all in 79, but they could have won it all. But they just couldn't. Jordan couldn't get past Jordan.
Yeah, so
no one could get past Jordan.
No.
They lost in the finals in 6.
Didn't they have a big man that went to the Bulls. Was Horace Grant on the Supersonics?
No, Horace wasn't.
No? They had a big man on the Supersonics that...
who was their big man?
Those jerseys should be brought back. Those were good
Well, they're
jerseys.
Coming back.
Are they?
They'll be here in 2 years. They'll be... The Supersonics will be back in 2 years. I think it's going to be Vegas and Seattle, the two teams.
Love it. Do you like the Kraken?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the Kraken have a cool...
I mean, they killed it with their... uniforms, I think. Their logo's amazing. Yeah, those are sweet.
And they're playing pretty good.
Yeah.
They made the playoffs last year. They beat Colorado.
The expansion teams in the NHL have been really good. Of late.
Yeah.
Like,
they do it right.
Golden Knights going to the Stanley Cup.
Las Vegas.
I've lost to my Capitals. So, but still, pretty impressive. Then Seattle comes out and they're really good too.
Yeah.
So,
love it. Yeah. Well, we're excited to let people hear this and our listeners. Get to know you. Where can we find you?
Yeah, my Instagram, Travis Holton Golf. Twitter's fun, Travis Fulton, and then website travisfultongolf.com. And the podcast, Stripe Show Podcast.
So yes, the Stripe Show Podcast.
Yeah, so we do Keith Stewart and I every Tuesday, full handicap of the tournament ahead. And then Thursday, always have a top teacher on. So, you know, that's where we really get into the meat and potatoes discussion of what not only you see on tour, but just common patterns, right?
And, mm-hmm. and yes.
talk instruction in general, which is the most popular of the pod.
Love it.
All right.
You got to check those out. Since you're on a podcast now, go check out Stripe Show Podcast first.
Yeah.
I have a guy, Golf Digest, that will text me, Powers, on Tuesdays yeah. and Thursdays after your podcast.
Oh, really?
And he's like, you got to hear this. You got, or on Wednesday, Friday, maybe the day after Wednesday, Friday. But no, the industry all loves you. We love you.
Powers, yeah.
yeah. Yeah. We're grateful for you. Thanks for being on here with us.
You bet, guys. Appreciate
you.
Yeah,
appreciate
you.
It.
Yeah, thank you.
Stay goated, everybody.
Stay goated.